The new Netflix series from director Ava DuVernay about the so-called Central Park Five has already had consequences. A former prosecutor on the case, Linda Fairstein, resigned from the board of Vassar after a petition calling for a boycott of her books. Jim Dwyer was a reporter for New York's Newsday at the time of the case. It's a case of five young men of color, 14 to 16, convicted in 1989 of brutally gang-raping a jogger in Central Park. There were calls for the death penalty. A little-known real estate developer named Donald Trump held press conferences, took out full-page ads. The young men served years in prison before a jailed serial rapist named Tyus Reyes admitted he did it, they didn't. Their confessions had been coerced. Reporter Jim Dwyer is now with the New York Times. Jim, you wrote recently, "I covered the trial. I wish I'd been more skeptical, that I'd shouted rather than mumbled the doubts I did express." I took that as a bit of an apology. What were you trying to say there?
Well, at the time, there were things that seemed wrong during the trial, and I wrote about what seemed off to me, particularly the day the prosecution presented the Central Park jogger, a woman named Patricia Miley, as a witness. Miss Miley had been severely injured during the attack and had no recollection of it. But it was an emotional powerhouse. And later that same day, the prosecution presented a lot of its scientific evidence, and not a single iota of evidence pointed to any of the five people who were accused of the crime.
You'd think there would have been some. And we now know that the evidence that was presented by one of the prosecutors was false. He said there was a hair from the victim found on the boy's clothing. It wasn't.
That's right.
Look, take us back. New York in 1989, as most American cities were in the throes of a crack epidemic, a much more dangerous place, racial tensions.
Sure. The atmosphere in the city certainly contributed to the demands for blood and for retribution. There was about five murders a day. There were rapes every few hours. There were robberies every 5 minutes, literally. There's a very good documentary about this case called Central Park Five by Ken Burns, Sarah Burns, and David McMahon that really captures the city in those days.
Well, but even after that wonderful documentary, there are people, including Donald Trump, who still don't believe that these five young men did not do this. Again, some more context. They had been, roving around the park with a large group of young people who had been doing things like taunting the homeless.
Oh, really, baby? Yeah. It was one man who was beaten basically unconscious. Yeah. They were not participants in the beating of that man.
Right. But
they were part of this group that was going around making trouble.
Right. But there was also, these coerced confessions.
Yeah. I think the film was very good in showing that dynamic. Kids under pressure, feeling like they have to come up with some story to satisfy the people interrogating them. Most of the interrogation not taking place in front of a video camera or on audio tape. And most of these most damning admissions were extracted originally from the boys while their parents were out of the room. At the time the boys were being interrogated, almost nothing was known about the jogger's movements because she was found nearly dead, unconscious, and didn't have anything on her to say who she was. So where she had been coming from and when it all happened, nobody knew that stuff. But in the series, there is a couple of moments when their prosecutors and the detectives are trying to supposedly straighten out the story so that it comes across as if they're in sync with the actual movements of the jogger. In the real world, it took quite a while for them to get a fairly reliable chronology of when the jogger left her house, when she would have been attacked, and so forth. And it seemed to me to surely overstate the case to say that they knew that while they were interrogating the kids. While they were on trial, they all refused a plea bargain that would have required them to admit anything to do with the jogger. Once they were out of the police station, they insisted during the trial that they had nothing to do with attacking the lady. Similarly, when they were in prison on their own years later, they went before parole boards and again insisted they knew nothing about the attack on the jogger. And that cost them more time in prison.
Raymond Santana and Yusuf Salam spoke in 2017 on Vlad TV about what it was like to be a convicted rapist in prison.
You there for rape? That's the worst crime you can go to prison for. The only crime that trumps rape is child molestation.
That's right.
And every prison that we went to, every poll that was taken, people were like, we will take care of them for the society.
Yeah.
We will get rid of them for you.
Yeah.
We're happy to do it.
Yeah.
Jim Dwyer, again, talk about the response, the visceral, vicious response to these five young men. Not just whiffs, but flat out the feel of, 50 years earlier and a lynch mob.
Well, there were people who openly expressed that. I mean, Patrick Buchanan talked about how desirable it would be to put a gallows up in Central Park and string up the oldest one, and then strip and horsewhip the others. When Donald Trump came out with his ad and his press conferences saying that he wanted people to hate these boys, that actually started a little bit of a blowback. The Cardinal of New York at the time, John O'Connor, spoke out saying, look, that we're not getting anywhere talking about hating these kids. And there was a bit of a blowback to the Trump desire for immediate retribution and hate.
And something he did not let go of, even after a serial rapist came forward, already in prison, serving time for rapes and attacks, and said he did it, and the DNA evidence was indisputable. He did it.
I think the most interesting aspect of that was that he made the district attorney's office, in essence, go back and look at their original case. And it wasn't just a matter of them finding his DNA was present, part of the crime against Trisha Miley, but they looked at the accounts given by the five boys of the attack, and they realized they were incoherent. They didn't know where it happened. They didn't know when it happened. They didn't know how it happened. And that, combined with the fact that Reyes really did know what happened, persuaded them to vacate the convictions in 2002.
And one of the saddest things, after he committed the Central Park jogger attack, he went on and carried out, as you write, a binge of raping, maiming, and murder. And the Central Park jogger was the second woman that he'd raped and beaten. He murdered after he attacked her because he was on the loose.
When he committed his first crime in the park that week, 2 days before the jogger, he attacked another woman, and she survived because the attack was interrupted. She had noticed that he had stitches on his chin, and the police actually went to Metropolitan Hospital, which is quite close to the park, and got his name. For reasons I've never understood, they never ran him down. They couldn't find him, and they never seemed to connect him to the attack that took place 2 days later.
Just terrible. And these five young men, they did win a civil suit, but their lives were destroyed.
I think that's the great virtue and power of this movie, at least to me. I'm no film critic, but in having followed this story and knowing these young men slightly, to see what the impact is, not only for them, but for their parents, for their sisters, their brothers. In some cases, family members, rejected them, accepted the story of their guilt. It was just agonizing. And that truth in the film is, to me, the great power and revelation of it. Mm. After this case, I ended up in the early days of the DNA era, following what was going on in terms of exonerations and how often and how we get things wrong. And it is a very common habit of human beings, whether they're presidents of the United States or local cops or whatever, to cling to their original view on things, even when there's incontrovertible scientific evidence. And in fact, in New York, some of the police and prosecutors who were involved in the original case still think they got it right.
Well, and some are still in the job. Do you think that will change?
I think this was not the work or failure of one person or three people. This was a big social failure. The press got it wrong. The cops got it wrong. The defense lawyers slept through the trial in a couple of cases. Judges reviewed this case and they just waved it on through. 24 jurors convicted these boys. There were a lot of people who botched up this case.
Circling back, you as a reporter have said, you know, you wish, you know, you'd shouted more of your doubt. And maybe all of us have been able to see, just see, what you describe in a chilling last graph in your article, that the evidence was right there in front of us, a picture from the crime scene, the grass that night in the park wet, and you could clearly see the trail where this poor woman had been dragged. It was only about 18 inches wide.
That's right. There was really only room in that trail for one person dragging another. This was not five boys dragging someone through the park. It was one person and one person only.
That's Jim Dwyer, who covered the trial of the Central Park Five 30 years ago for New York's Newsday. He's now written a piece for the new Netflix four-part series, When They See Us, for the New York Times, where he's currently employed. Jim, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Robin.